This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Welcome to the Thursday, March 15th, 2018 edition of the Noon Business Hour. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. It's 41 degrees in Chicago under fair skies, going up to 45 today. Mostly sunny this afternoon. The AccuWeather forecast is coming up. The markets are, they were mixed for a little while. The NASDAQ dipped below into negative territory for a little while, but the Dow was still in triple-digit territory. Let's get the latest on the markets on the Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park and, or I should say, presented by Old Second Bank. And here is Elisa Parenti at Bloomberg.
Well, Rob, you're right. The blue chip's up 209 points or almost 1%. We were for a moment above 25,000 again. Right now, 24,965. NASDAQ up 2, S&P adding 4. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index lower by a tenth of a percent. Fewer workers joined unemployment lines last week. The Labor Department finds there were 226,000 first-time applications for benefits across the country. That was 4,000 fewer than the prior week. A new survey is revealing fading optimism among home builders. The National Association of Home Builders reports sentiment among builders has declined for a third consecutive month now. And home prices posted a strong gain last month. Redfin says prices surged nearly 9% as buyers engaged in bidding wars for the limited number of homes that are on the market. Prices across the country now up more than 6% from their July 2006 peak. Back to you, Rob.
Well, action-packed Noon Business Hour for you today. We'll talk about the newest numbers on manufacturing, joblessness, and some home builder confidence numbers. Loyola in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 1985. Does that mean the people of Rogers Park will reap the benefits of that? And then we'll also talk about the Space Force. President Trump talked about possible Space Force, so we'll talk about the military applications in space. And then why you should file your taxes sooner rather than later. All that and more coming up right here on the Noon Business Hour.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Loyola men's basketball team plays in its first NCAA tournament game since 1985 this afternoon. We'll talk about how it'll help the school. But right now, it's a busy day for economic data, and we're hearing more about tariffs from the Trump administration. Let's check in with Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, based in New York. Chris, welcome back to the program. Since tariffs are at the top of mind in the business world and seemingly in the political world, let's talk about the latest manufacturing numbers from the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia and the Empire State Index, which shows the things in the world of manufacturing are humming along at a fairly nice clip.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much exactly the way to characterize it. The Empire Index was up more than expected. The Philly Fed Index holding in at high levels where it has been for 6 months. I think this is really one of those things looking back at the last year that's maybe most remarkable about the transformation of the economy, the fact that we're creating manufacturing jobs in big numbers and the orders are holding up and manufacturing seems to be thriving. You mentioned tariffs. I think it probably at the moment has more to do with regulation and tax relief, but tariffs are definitely part of the equation as well.
How does, you look at these numbers, the manufacturing index numbers, how do these readings translate into, say, a factory town? When these manufacturing numbers are good, how does that manifest itself in the broader economy?
Well, what we've seen, and this goes back 30 years, is that when manufacturing is strong, then we're typically looking at GDP growth of 3% or better. if GDP is below 3, like it has been the last 8 years or so, the average GDP growth rate has been about 2.25. Manufacturing just cannot grow in that environment, and it's the difference between essentially recession in those towns, jobs being cut, factories closing their doors, income under pressure, and the flip side, which of course is income growth, hiring, and a more vibrant economic picture. And when we look at cities across the U.S., up until now, since the 08-09 recession, the biggest growth has been in medium-sized cities like Richmond and Charleston that have vibrant service economies. But the manufacturing towns have been left out. So now we're seeing a real renaissance there. It's the story that only goes back about a year and a half, but a true material difference in living standards.
Thank you very much for the insights, as always. Chris Lowe, Chief Economist, FTN Financial, based in New York. Coming up, what Loyola's appearance in the NC2A tournament means for the school.
Because money matters, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
For the first time in more than 30 years, the Loyola Ramblers are playing in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Let's discuss the impact with Danny Ecker, who's a reporter with Crane Chicago Business. Danny, welcome back to the program. Thinking about Loyola's trip to the tournament reminds me, I went to Marquette, and it reminds me of the time, was it 15 years ago, 2003, when Dwayne Wade led Marquette to the Final Four? And there was an analysis many years later about the health of Marquette enrollment and also the men's basketball program before and after that Final Four run. And that represented a sea change in the Marquette basketball organization. Can Loyola expect the same thing if they go deep in this tournament?
Well, it's the kind of thing where I guess it comes down to, you know, how much do they aspire to become an athletic powerhouse in any particular sport? Obviously, they've got pretty storied history, you know, in men's basketball at the college level, and the 1963 national champions, and you know, the only school from Illinois to have that title. So I don't think that it necessarily has this. If they make a run of the Final Four, I think it'll be a national story. It'll be they'll have long legs for them afterward. But, you know, I think after a while, this stuff can die down, if depending on how much sustained success they have. But, you know, you'd have more people who care about them, maybe more donors and alumni getting caring and donating to the school and to the athletic program. And, you know, it can give a program a really significant boost if you can make a run, you know, 2-3 games deep into March Madness.
It's do you want to be have this be a turning point for your organization? For example, thing at Gonzaga 20 years ago, which came out of nowhere to have a deep run of the tournament and is now a powerhouse program, basically. The same thing with Butler, or you can be a trivia question like Chaminade. So it's up to you.
Yeah. Yeah, and it also depends on, again, I think maybe this will help for a younger generation, maybe help Loyola Chicago stand out in the eyes of people who confuse them with Loyola Marymount, maybe, you know, for some people. And it's a little different situation because Loyola is not like they didn't exist, you know. They still have that story history. You know, think about the comparison of like a Florida Gulf Coast, which, you know, hogged all the attention a few years ago in the tournament, you know, school that most people had never heard of and, you know, would only remember for that reason alone. I think Loyola, is not going to be known as, oh, yeah, that run they had in the tournament. I mean, depends. If they go win a national championship, that could certainly be the case. But if they, they do have a history that a lot of people, at least from different generations, know them for.
Well, thank you very much, Danny Ecker, a reporter with Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. One more question, though, and that is, will Rogers Park see some sort of economic boon from people at least watching the game this afternoon at 2:10?
I think it'll be a lot of people really all over the city. I mean, you know, you saw what happened last year with Northwestern, and that wasn't just Evanston. There are people who at least paid attention and wanted to get behind a fun story because, you know, you haven't had that much success, especially recently in Chicago area basketball. It's been a while since, you know, DePaul was really making a lot of noise. And so you've got, you know, people certainly are clamoring for when you have a story like this to get behind. People are all about it, and it extends beyond, you know, the north side there.
Danny Ecker, thanks for joining us once again. Loyola takes on Miami at 2:10, the tip-off this afternoon. Of course, you can follow along at sports at 15 and 45 right here on WBBM. WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's get the latest from the markets now from Elisa Parenti of Bloomberg.
Rob, you mentioned some weakness on the NASDAQ, and in fact, the composite is in the red now by 7 points or 0.1%. The Dow still higher by 186 points or 0.75%, and the S&P up 3. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg lower by almost 0.2%. Crude oil futures pairing gains now up 34 cents to $61.30 a barrel. As for the grains markets, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had wide ranges in beans today, but both sides on wheat and corn also. Corn has been down 3.5 to up 1.5 at the moment. December is down 1.75. That's down 1 at 4.06¾. Beans have been up 14 to down 5 at the moment. July's are up 10¾. November's up 8¾. And wheat's been down 13 to up 4.5 at the moment. July wheat down 7¾ at 498.5. Mixed prices here on lack of moisture in South America and moisture here in our wheat country. And this is Pete at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Stocks have dropped from earlier highs. We'll see what's impacting the markets. In Technology Thursday, President Trump envisions a space-based branch of the military, while Russia says it's heading to Mars. Around a quarter of Americans wait until the last minute to file their taxes, but that may not be the best strategy. Police are searching for two children taken by their father following the murder of their mother in the south suburbs. WBBM Business, the Dow is up 193 points, the S&P 500 up 4, and the NASDAQ is down 3. The AccuWeather forecast for this afternoon, mostly sunny, a high of 45. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy and cold, and a low of 26. Right now, it's 45 degrees in Chicago. The noon business hour continues, presented by Old Second Bank. Markets are mixed at this hour, and we're joined by Michael Palumbo, founder of Third Millennium Trading and author of the book Calculated Risk, and he's based in Chicago. Mike, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about the Dow, which is going thanks to Boeing.
Yeah, good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for having me on. The market is pretty strong today, but it is off its highs. There's not a lot of news right now driving the market. We're in between earnings seasons, so we haven't seen a lot of volatility lately. There just hasn't been a lot of news to drive the market.
And so even one of the lessons that you learn from being on this program for a sustained period of time is that the market is very resilient, and it does take a lot, it would have to take a really big external factor to move it in any one direction. And even things like the threat of a trade war, after a couple of days, just shrugs it off and keeps chugging.
Yeah, you know what, Rob? Markets continue to get smarter and smarter, and the things that used to move markets for weeks and months and years sometimes play out now in days, just because people have begun to realize that a lot of these exogenous events don't really move the needle. So a trade war sounds terrible, right? But when you start to drill down on what really will happen, most likely is that not a lot will happen, and it will probably economically affect the U.S. and foreign stocks very little. And so it makes a great headline, and it's great news for folks to talk about. But in the long run, the market usually, as you've said, the market usually shrugs that stuff off.
Let's talk about the housing market, which home builder confidence was down a little bit, but that's only because home builders are still say they're having a hard time keeping up with demand.
Yeah, it's one of my big picks for 2018 is home builders. I like home builders and airlines most in the United States, and it's because we are in a cycle where demand is growing, and you know the numbers that come out really show there's strength in the housing market overall, and I think it's going to be a big winner this year.
Is there some way that the home builders could wave a magic wand and just change the conditions that would allow them to catch up? Is it simply a matter of they can't find enough workers, they can't find enough land, they can't find enough materials, or is it all three?
Some of it is shortage, no doubt about it. And you mentioned that labor situation. This is the first time in many, many years since the financial crisis that we're actually starting to see some labor shortages in some industries, and that actually might drive up wages, which would be great, actually. I mean, it might not be good for companies, but it certainly would be good for the middle class. So, yeah, I think the biggest constraint on the industry right now is the fact that they just can't make enough buildings for supply. So that might cause a little bit of an increase in pricing here too, which certainly it maybe isn't the best, although it's good for current homeowners, but it's not good for folks looking for their first houses. But yeah, the industry overall I think is very healthy.
The great conversation starter of 2018, of course, is Bitcoin, which is now trading at a little over $8,000 today. It's down from the highs of $12,000 or $13,000 a couple of months ago. Is it fair to say the bubble has popped, or maybe the bubble is just adapting in its size?
Here's the thing. I've never called it a bubble. I can understand people that do. What happened was, believe it or not, Bitcoin actually got almost up to 20,000 a few months ago, and it happened right after the CBOE and then the CME here in Chicago were the first ones to start trading futures in Bitcoin. Well, a lot of times when those events happen, you get a blow off top or bottom in the specific investment, and in this case in Bitcoin, it seemed like that was a big blow off top. And we got to 18,000, 19,000. It looked like it was going through 20 and then failed. And that was it. That was the top. And since then, it's been pretty much in a bear market for the last 2-3 months. And now, as you say, it's trading a little over 8,000, 8,200 right now. You know, as far as valuing Bitcoin, it's not for individual investors to be trying to do this. Bitcoin is a very difficult product to try to value. It really is just going on emotion right now. And like I said, we had the big blow off top at 18,000, 19,000, and I don't think we'll see that again for a long time. But Bitcoin's viability in the long term, I think, it is solid. So the question is, where does it go from here? I think because of what happened at the CBOE and the Merck and all of the bullish sentiment that happened then, there's no way we're going back there anytime soon. But, you know, it might be in a trading range. It might be 5,000 to 12,000 for a while until people start to get more comfortable that it's going to be around for the long haul. And then maybe we do see a rally from here. But I wouldn't call it a bubble. I, you know, just because it is a legitimate investment. It's just that it's something that we've never seen before. Cryptocurrencies is such a new phenomenon. It actually was invented by a gentleman by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto, who actually might not even be one person. We don't know who that person is. It could be a group of people. But anyway, it was only invented 10 years ago. So this is a very new technology, kind of like the Internet was 20, 30 years ago. And now look at what's happened to the Internet since then. So it's so unpredictable what's going to happen here. I would just caution investors. And if you're going to play in this space, you better be ready to have some days where you're just going to get killed. Because, I mean, these things move 10% in a day. I just don't think the individual investor maybe should be playing in this space.
Thanks a lot, Michael Palumbo, founder of Third Millennium Trading, author of the book Calculator Risk, based in Chicago. Ahead in Technology Thursday, President Trump and his counterpart in Russia are looking to space.
A wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday, and today we're gazing at space, where President Trump sees a branch of the U.S. military, and Russian President Putin says a mission to Mars isn't that far away. We welcome in Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, welcome back to the program. Obviously, based on the reaction on social media, President Trump proposing a space force did create a lot of punchlines this week so far. But he wouldn't be the first president or the first person to talk about the military operating in space or military applications in space.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you know, we'll take it seriously for a second and understand that, look, in all military strategy, the high ground, literally and figuratively, has been a goal. Whether it's Bunker Hill or it's something that's orbiting the Earth, the goal was get above the enemy or the people you're worried about, and always being above. And first time there was an Air Force was the first time that a nation suddenly had an advantage over others. So, in generally speaking, you know, the upper hand, literally and figuratively, is the high ground, and that's what they're talking about.
And but there have also been United Nations treaties forbidding military operations in space and the military branching out into space. Are all the major powers going to throw that paper away?
Well, you know, you raise the most important next question, which is, should we? Not can we, but should we? And obviously, there's a lot of disagreement on that front. I mean, I think that the idea of the non-militarization of space is probably a good thing. I think, you know, this is speaking personally, but if you look at what the technology that's been developed for space, which has benefited all of us, has not been around war generally. You know, everything from Velcro to solar power came out of the space, the space department, if you will, NASA. And so all that has not been developed, as far as we know, to develop some sort of advantage over another nation other than bragging rights. In the end, it's about exploration and human curiosity. So, yeah, I think it's probably not a good idea to militarize our stratosphere.
And we talk about all those space technology spinoffs. They came out of the moon race of the 1960s, and there may be a Mars race in the not-too-distant future, because Russian President Vladimir Putin talked about a Russian mission to Mars. So here's my question for you. Who gets to Mars first, NASA, Elon Musk, or Russia?
It's not even a contest. I think Elon Musk. I think that, you know, again, I'm generally speaking pretty open-minded on all this stuff, but it's pretty clear to me that the fastest-moving entity is going to be the smallest one, and Elon Musk's group is going to be there. But you really are right to look at which company, not which country, is going to be proceeding. In the case of the Space Corps or Space, you know, whatever they're going to call it, you know, look at Northrop, look at Boeing, look at, you know, any of the aerospace companies. But if you're looking at who's going to get to Mars first, with all due respect to Putin, who bragged that he sleeps or did sleep with a shotgun, my money's on Elon Musk.
And when we'll all gather around a TV one day to say the Roadster has landed. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor of the Today Show, based in Cambridge. Always a pleasure to have you on. Always fun to talk about the stuff that his area of expertise, which is always enjoyable. Join us this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, why you may not want to wait until the deadline to file your taxes. Don't be that person standing in line at the post office on April 15th.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's just over a month until the tax deadline, which is April 17th this year. Let's look at the reasons you may not want to push the envelope in filing a last-minute return. We welcome in Greg McBride, who is the Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Greg, welcome back to the program. It seems like reason number one why you don't want to be a last-minute filer is you don't want to be on TV in line at the post office at 10 o'clock in the evening of April 17th telling a reporter why you filed last minute.
Yeah, that's not a lot of fun, and particularly if you're going to owe money. You know, if you wait till the last minute, you're going to be shortchanging yourself on time in terms of where do you come up with that money. A lot of people get blindsided by that tax bill. So an incentive to file sooner rather than later, just so you know where you stand. And if you owe, you have time to come up with the money.
Another issue, and this seems to be like an issue that's just native to our time, is tax identity theft. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's been a rapid increase in recent years where, you know, basically it's the sort of latest version of identity theft where fraudsters will actually file a tax refund, tax return under your Social Security number, claiming a big refund. And the way that people find out about this is when they file their tax return. It gets rejected because the IRS already has one for that Social Security number. So, again, waiting to the last minute, you're giving potential fraudsters a bigger window in which to file a fraudulent return. If you file sooner rather than later, you can actually beat a potential fraudster to the punch.
And if you cram, there's just simply there's greater opportunity for mistakes.
There's a lot of stress that comes with waiting until the last minute, and I think with that stress, certainly the potential for mistakes, and, you know, just like you're leaving yourself short on time to come up with the money, you're leaving yourself short on time to make sure that everything's buttoned up, whether you're preparing it yourself or using somebody else. You want to make sure there's adequate time to look over everything and make sure everything's accurate.
And if you hustle all of the papers over to your tax preparer on, say, April 1st, you're not going to get a whole lot of attention from them.
Yeah, you just like you don't want to ask your minister if they want to go golfing Sunday morning. They're busy. Same thing with the accountants. They're busy in early April. So, get the paperwork into them sooner rather than later. Waiting to the last minute, there's a good chance that your paperwork's going to the bottom of the pile, and then, you may end up having to file an extension rather than getting the return itself filed on time.
Well, Greg, at the risk of tooting my own horn, taxes are done. So I guess I got my gold star for 2018. Thank you very much, Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst, Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app. WBBM News Time, 12:55. Let's get the latest in the markets. Sponsored by Baird, here's Elisa Parenti of Bloomberg.
Well, Rob, the Dow is now higher by 122 points, or 0.5%. Certainly not quite the gains we saw earlier in the session. We're at 24,872. The losses on the NASDAQ are getting steeper, now down 22 points to 74.74. And the S&P slipping into the red now, down 4 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg lower by 0.25%. Chicago-based employees of Southwest Airlines received $51.3 million. Of more than $540 million through a profit-sharing program. The carrier says this 2017 award is about 11.3% of each eligible employee's compensation. It's the equivalent of more than 5 weeks' pay. And Southwest is flying higher on Wall Street today, up to $60 a share. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.